Thank you, Andy. It's great. I always had a dream that I could play the piano. I couldn't be bothered going to the lessons, so that killed that dream, really, didn't it? It's funny, I've got a twin brother. I think most of you know that. I've got an identical twin brother. And when you're twins, they send you off to everything together. And so, I don't know why it is, if it's cheaper, but we were sent for piano lessons together, and so the first lessons you learn to do that on your two hands, and when we went back, I did it, the teacher said, that's very good, that's good, that was good, well done, that's good. And then Ian did it, and he went like that, and she said, oh, that's very good, and Ian said, I've written a little song, so he kept going, and I stopped going, and that was the end of that.
Yes, yes.
No, I wish you'd stuck at it, because to me it plays an awful lot. It's a great thing. He comes in, he just sits down and he just plays without music. He can play anything. And I can play the bagpipes and he can't. And so not a lot of call of that in church these days. That's the problem. So we jump to Genesis 39, because we did leave poor old Joseph down a pit. And then he gets sold into slavery, and he ends up in Egypt. And if we are chapter 38 is about Judah and Tamar, and then we find Joseph again in chapter 39. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he was a successful man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all he did to prosper in his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight and served him. Then he made him overseer of his house, and all that he had he put under his authority. So it was, from the time that he had made him overseer of his house and all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in the house and in the field. Thus he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he did not know what he had except for the bread which he ate. Now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. Now this is the only thing I don't like about Joseph, really. It's not a sin to be young and good looking, it's just not fair. And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph. And she said, lie with me. But he refused and said to his master's wife, look, my master does not know what is with me in the house. And he has committed all that he has to my hand. There's no one greater in this house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? So it was, as she spoke to Joseph day by day, that he did not heed her to lie with her or be with her. But it happened about this time, when Joseph went into the house to do his work, and none of the men were of the house was inside, that she caught him by his garment, saying, lie with me. But he left his garment in her hand and fled and ran outside. So it was, when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and fled outside, that she called to the men of her house and spoke to them, saying, see, he's brought into us a Hebrew to mock us. He came in to lie with me. And I cried with a loud voice. And it happened, when he heard that I lifted my voice and cried out, that he left his garment with me and fled and went outside. She kept his garment with her until his master returned and came home. Then she spoke to him with words like these, saying, the Hebrew servant whom you brought to us came into me to mock me. So it happened that I lifted my voice and cried out, that he left his garment with me and fled outside. So it was, when his master heard the words which his wife spoke to him, saying, your servant did to me after this manner, that his anger was aroused. Then Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, a place where the king's prisoners were confined. And he was there in the prison. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy, and he gave him favour in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever they did there, it was his doing. The keeper of the prison did not look into anything that was under Joseph's authority, because the Lord was with him. And whatever he did, the Lord made it prosper. Amen. So how do you cope when it all goes wrong? How do you stop from being a cynic? And I noticed that there's a program on TV, I think it's called Grumpy Old Men. Have you seen that? And I started thinking, do you know anyone who could be on that program? And I'm thinking, as I get older, I could become a grumpy old man. Do you know what I mean? Just thinking, what's wrong with that? Why don't you fix that? Why is, you know, like it's like when they bring me my food to the restaurant. When I was young, I would never send it back. But now I say, that soup's cold, sorry, can you eat it up? And so Mandy's dying. And I'm thinking, well, you're paying for it. Why? If I wanted to buy cold soup, I'd order a hot soup, and they brought me a cold soup, and to me it seems completely reasonable. But to her, I'm just become a grumpy old man. That's one side, but it's actually when you start becoming cynical and you actually don't believe anything anybody says. You know, it's a bit like you want to try and keep away from it. When something happens and it's too good to be true, you start being cynical. It's like somebody says, I've got a gold tooth, I've got prayed for it, I've got a gold tooth. You think, I don't think so. Better Dennis put that in. Better forgot about that. And then it's almost, what's your first reaction? Is it to say, wow, well, get it checked? Because actually, there's a time when people seem to get gold teeth. Mm. Why would God do that? I've no idea. Because he can, I suppose. But they found out that roughly half the people who said they get gold teeth, the dentist put them in. Now, I would not forget a dentist putting a gold filling in me. In fact, I think you have to pay for it. Well, I haven't got any. Because you have to pay for them. So I would know, but I almost think, and I think, have I become a cynic? And how do you stop yourself? Well, I'm going to talk to you about two things. The first bit is about the fortress of hope. And then there's the fortress of integrity. The two things that Joseph ran into just to keep his heart right. Because three times it says here in Genesis 39 verses 2 and then 23, in fact several times, keeps saying that the Lord was with him. Even in the midst of all this hard time, God was with them. That's an amazing comfort just to remember. I'm not sure if Joseph knew that. I'm not sure that even if he said, how are you feeling, Joe? Do you feel God's with you? He would have probably said, no, God abandoned me. She abandoned me. But I was at home, and it was my daddy's favourite, and I had my coat of many colours, and everybody thought it was wonderful. I really thought God was with me then. But now, no, he's deserted me. Even when you don't know he's there, even when you can't trace him, he's still with you. Even when you can't hear his voice, even when you can't see his footsteps, he's still looking after you. He's there all the time, and Joseph doesn't realise, because everything he does gets blessed. Even though Joseph, I'm not sure Joseph's given them, I'm not sure where he is. And there's times in our lives when sometimes God will bless you without you even knowing it. There's things that happen to you and God protects you from things and brings you safe into a place. And then the Bible said also he was given favour, that the Lord gives him favour in both Potiphar's house and in the prison. Whatever he does, he becomes, something good becomes of him. And then he gets given authority in the midst of a dream not being fulfilled. He still assumes authority. He refuses to be dominated by circumstances and just rule over and die. You know, just give up in life. And you ever felt like just giving up in life? I've had enough. I'm just going to roll over and die. And it's a great plan, isn't it? But remember when Jesus says Lazarus has died. Remember what Thomas said. Let's go and die with him also. He must have been great fun to be around, wouldn't he? Really. Hey, my cousin's died. All right, let's all go die as well. That would be fantastic. It's almost like some people, just when things don't go right, everything's gone. They just give up and everything. And some people are like that. If you're like that, then it stops you being happy in what you've got. Because you're always forgetting what you've lost. And some people are always spend all their time wishing for things they used to have, forget to enjoy what they've got now. One of my friends, he said to me, I've made a decision about my life. And I said, what's that? He said, I'm going to live it. And I thought, that's interesting. What else do you do with life? But I knew what he meant. He said, I'm actually going to enjoy my life. I'm actually going to live my life. Rather than just let life happen to me, I'm going to make a decision to live it. And so Joseph also shows himself trustworthy. People trust him. And he has that sort of integrity. He had both men trusted him, a capacity in that man to be trustworthy. And say, just because you're in bad circumstances doesn't mean your character is blown. Doesn't mean that you should stop being the person you were called to be in the first place. And I'm going to give you three new commandments to help you in the time of adversity. We're using this expression, running into the fortress of hope. When despair is about you, you have to run into a fortress. You have to find a safe place. There's times in your life when you don't know what to do next. And sometimes when I have to make a big decision, I don't know what to do. Everything's a mess. You know, everything's terrible. And, you know, everything's gone wrong. People say, don't make big decisions then. Because if you make a decision when you're on rocky ground, on unstable ground, it probably won't be a good one. Go back to when you did understand things. Go back to when things seemed safe and thinking, okay, well, I know that God loves me. I know that God loved me then, and he doesn't change if he still loves me now. I know that God was always nicer to me than I deserved, and yet that will still be the same now. Go back to when everything did make sense, before you make a decision with what doesn't make sense now. Paul said in Philippians, I've learned to be content, whatever the circumstances. Content doesn't mean the same as satisfied. Satisfied, you sit down and you're ended. But content, so holds the word of contending. You still, I'm really pleased. I'm really grateful what God's given to me. But I think there's more. And Paul said, I've learned to be content. So it's not natural. It's not a natural gift. Some people are just happy. My youngest daughter, she said twins. And she blames me for that. I'm not doing it with me, I wouldn't there. But she's got Zoe and Zara, and they're only 8 months old, coming up for 9 months old. But already, the temperament is very different. They're very different. Zara will just sit there, happy. You know, whatever happens, she's happy. Zoe, if you don't play with her for 10 minutes, she's crying at you and giving you thinking, my goodness, we're all different. And some of us are like that. Some of us are happy no matter what happens, and others of us, as soon as something goes wrong, we're crying to be picked up and to be pacified. And contentment for some people seems to be a natural gift. I think I'm like that. I'm just fairly easygoing in life. I think that you asked Mandy one of the gifts, one of the things she likes best about me is I'm like that. I don't panic. I don't get really high, I never get really low, I'm just sort of in there. That's one of the things she likes most about me. One of the things she finds most frustrating about me is I'm just like that all the time. She says, why don't you, but it's a panic, it's like, I know. I said, then don't you understand? Do you understand we're in a mess? I understand, it's an emergency, I understand, okay. And I stay like this, because I'm like a duck. I'm floating on the water, but my feet are kicking away like that. So I'm just phlegmatic, I'm just happy and comfortable like that, because that's what my temperament. I've nothing to be great, I can't say, it's not me that's done that, that's the way I was born, I think. But others of us have to learn to be content. Possibly I've learned to be content. So for him, it obviously wasn't normal. It wasn't natural. He said, because my natural tendency is not to be content, really. That's what he's saying. My natural tendency is to wish something else had happened. So you had to learn to run into that fortress of hope. And here's three thou shalt nots. They're not in the Bible, these thou shalts. Number one is thou shalt live in the here and now. Number two is thou shalt not hurry. Number three, thou shalt not take thyself too seriously. I'll talk to them all one at a time. Number one is, thou shalt live in the here and now. Lots of people just spend their life preparing to live their life. Do you know what I mean? They're almost like getting ready for it and getting ready for it. My father had a friend who was always known about his retirement, always. And he's saying, my dad worked in, it's called human resources now, it's the personnel department. So he knew all about pensions and all those sort of things. And this man was always saying to him, I'm going to have this pension, I'm going to get this, I'm going to get this, and that, and the next thing. And everything he was going to do was pen. And he worked extra hours so he could have this home in Spain, they want to go live in that and do all that sort of thing. And he died 2 days before his 65th birthday. He never retired. He never was the ultimate retirement, isn't it? But to sort of, he never did. But he spent all his life looking forward to something that never happened. And I'm not saying we should be sort of hedonistic and we should just sort of spend all our money now and don't care because who knows we've got tomorrow. But actually, the only day we're set enough is today. I mean, we should enjoy today. I mean, the sun's out. I'm just stuck in here and listening to the Scotsman. Some people, they're always living in anticipation but never in realisation. So not all the time thinking about what's going to happen. That's the difference between a God dream and a daydream. A daydream never happens. A God dream happens. And you know what I have to do in between times in getting ready for it. Psalm 23 says, the Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. Well, it doesn't mean I won't want the shepherd. It means I will never be in want. Because you lack nothing, like Jehovah Jireh. And that came out. Do you know when the first time Jehovah Jireh is mentioned in the Bible? The Lord is my provider. It's when Abraham was about to sacrifice Isaac. And that was a hard time for him. And it's actually in the hard times you find out God is your provider. Because when you don't need anything, you don't need a provider, do you? Jesus actually said, I've come for the sick. The doctors come for the sick, not the healthy. And sometimes it's when we've got troubles, and that's when we learn some more about God than when you've got plenty. Mandy and I, we like watching The Apprentice. I don't know if you watch The Apprentice, but we always like to find something we like watching, and we record it, and we sit down, and that's our little treat. I quite like it, and sometimes a bit daft, but something I've noticed, I didn't even know what The Apprentice is like. They have two teams, and they have to go and do some project. Some of them are impossible, I couldn't do them. But one team wins, and they get sent off for a treat. The other team loses, and one of them comes back, and they all come back, and one of them gets sacked, or you're fired, something like that. What I noticed is that the team that wins always just go off and have champagne or something somewhere else. The team that loses, and sometimes they only lose by very, very little, they go to some greasy spoon cafe somewhere, and they all sit really despondent, and they pore over what they've done to the finest detail and just blame each other. And I just thought, the team that won aren't analysing what they did at all. The team that lost are analysing too. And sometimes the only time you learn something is by getting it wrong, by losing it. Because we don't analyse our successes. And you think, if the only time you learn something is by losing, then why do you think you lose so much? If God's trying to teach you something. It's like, when do you pray more? When you're in difficulty or when you're not in difficulty? Does God want you to pray? So, if you pray more when you're in difficulty than when you're not in difficulty, why do you think God sends difficulty to you? So I've just learned to pray a lot when I'm not in difficulty. Just hope to be able to avoid this. My prayer life's totally selfish. It's nothing to do with seeing His face. It's just keeping things all right now. Because where you are now is where God wants to bless you. God wants to bless you today, now, not next week, next year. He will do that next week, next year. But He's got something that's just for today. It's like the manna. If you don't eat it today, it'll go off. You can't have it tomorrow. His blessing is fresh every morning. You don't have to worry about if I receive all God's blessing today, there'll be none for tomorrow. Of course there will be. There'll be plenty for tomorrow. There'll be tomorrow's blessing tomorrow. And tomorrow, to be honest with you, there'll be tomorrow's trouble tomorrow as well. But we'll just take it all a day at a time. Somebody said that, I don't know who said this quote, I asked for all things that I might enjoy life, and He gave me life that I might enjoy all things. So almost we think if I had everything in life, it'd make me happy. It doesn't. It doesn't. I'm sure we've all met very rich people. I've met some extremely rich people. I've met some of the richest people in Britain. And some of them are happy, but some of them are really not happy. Because the money won't buy them happiness. And at least when we're skint and got no money, and we're sad, and we're having a hard time, we think, we have this sort of the comfort, well, if I had a load of money, I'd be happy. But they've got a load of money and they're not happy. Because money doesn't make you happy. It helps. I mean, I think it wouldn't make me sad. I mean, I think God could trust me with a lot more money than there is at the moment, and that's all I'm saying. if you have an award with them later on, if you can mention that. But I don't think, I think that, but it doesn't make you happy. Because we think things will make us enjoy life. God said, no, I'm just going to give you a quarter of life so you can enjoy the things you've already got. And God's purpose is that I live my life and depend on Him now. Second one, thou shalt not hurry. Don't hurry. It takes time for some long-term dreams to happen. I'm not a very patient person. I'm sort of, you know, so I think like fast food is slow. You know what I mean? I used to go to McDonald's a lot, but being a Campbell, see, I felt as a Campbell, if I went to McDonald's, I was sort of building bridges of reconciliation. And I've sacrificed my body to reach out to those McDonald's. But somebody told me recently, you become what you eat. I'm not becoming a McDonald's. I will not be going back in there. I'll tell you that. It's the end of that. Burger King here become. I'm not going to become a McDonald's. You won't think twice before you go in that place. But I find when I stand there that it used to be really fast. When McDonald's opened up at first, if you gave them an order and they didn't have it ready within so many minutes, I forget what it was, you didn't pay for it. And when I was at Bible college, we used to go in and give as big an order as we could. And but a third of the time, we didn't pay for it. Which is great, not anymore. And I have a wife who, because Mandy's not here, it's amazing, but you feel free to say. But
you called him.
But she's really fussy. She's really fussy. I was brought up at mealtime, you know, it's like, that's your dinner. What's the alternative? Fasting. If you're not hungry enough to eat that, wait until the next meal, because you will be hungry enough to eat that. And that's all there is. And so I like everything. I mean, I'm an omnivore. I eat everything. But Mandy and her family, they're all a bit picky and like this. And so when I go to McDonald's or anywhere, I have to go and say, I like a burger, please, with just a bun and the burger. You have no idea how complicated that is in McDonald's. And I said, so you want a cheeseburger without the cheese? I said, no, I don't want a cheeseburger at all, please. I want a quarter pounder. I want a quarter pounder without cheese, without anything else. And it waits so long for it. I said, this isn't fast food, this is fasting. It just goes so long. I am not a patient person, so I know naturally I want things to happen. And we live in an age where we want things to happen. But actually, if you plant a tree, it will start growing straight away, but it won't grow big. And so you might say, that tree's not grown yet. I planted there last year. It is growing. It's just you can't see it yet. I sometimes think, there's nothing happening in my life. It is. It's growing. It's growing, but it's a tree. It's a tree. God is growing trees. He's growing significant things in life. He's going to have things which we'll see in the last session. We'll go beyond you, even longer than you. So you have to be patient. And dreams take time to come true. You can see it in Joseph. It took 13 years. He's 30 years old before Pharaoh actually notices him. It's all those years, all these 20s are just gone. He just loses them. His late teens and 20s, they're just gone as a slave. He's done nothing with it. It takes time for God's dream to be refined in us so that they can come true. It takes time. Because remember what was said? If Joseph's dream had come true when he was 17, it would have been very bad for him and the rest of the world. He had to be matured. And God's changed us to be the person who can be trusted with that. The third one is, thou shalt not take thyself too seriously. That helps his hope as well, because he becomes self-inflated. This is what Luke says, Jesus said in Luke 14, for everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. Proverbs says, a man's gift makes room for him and brings him before great men. Some people just think, you know, if they're not around, it won't work. You know, we all feel indispensable. And I think we're all guilty of that. My family seem to be full of all workaholics. We all like working long hours. We all seem to be driven people, I think is what the counsellor told me. And I think, I just like to be doing things. And remember one of the counsellors asking me, so what will happen if you're not there? It'll be fine. It'll be fine. He said, well, you need to listen to yourself. It'll be fine, because actually you start thinking you're indispensable. When Lewis, some of you remember, who was our general superintendent, he led Kensington Temple and grew it from 500 to 5,000, so he knew what he was talking about. He said to me once, David, when you want to know how significant you are, once you've had a bath, when you come out of the bath, turn around and look in, and the hole that's left is how much you'll be missed when you've gone. I thought, I don't take baths, I shower, but I know what you mean, Rin. It's just basically, actually, you know, it's very quick. And for me, I don't know if you know who Win Lewis was, but he was like the main man for us as we were growing up. And just a few years later, we were interviewing people for Elam Ministry, and we said, so do you remember Win Lewis in Gordon Hills? And he said, no, so who were they? But already, 3 years later, they didn't know who they were. And the day we take ourselves so seriously, we think, man, the world won't manage without me. Sometimes our children won't cope without us. Social won't cope. Yes, they will. Yes, they will. I heard a preacher say it this way, something a bit harsh, he said, we all think we're indispensable, even Jesus died. And all of us have a limited time on this life. And the day we think we're indispensable, we're actually teaching everybody to rely on us rather than rely on Jesus. It's not helping people. It's not helping people. And I know that, because often Mandy and I, we have these big discussions about helping the kids. I say, Mandy, let them struggle a bit. And then Mandy says, no, we can't. We have to help them. I say, yeah, but you're not helping them. And then when I see them, I go, Mandy's like my check, help them. Because I find out, I sort of believe it up here, but in here, I can't go with it. You know what I mean? But nevertheless, the thing, I'm not sure I'm always helping. Because sometimes you have to help people stand on their own 2 feet. You have to let them deal with the consequences of their own lives. Let's not take ourselves too seriously. The Lord doesn't need us. He does not need us. But he chooses to need us. And that's why he gives us significance. He didn't need us to get the world saved. He could just go out and have an angel arrive in sort of huge shining light and just scare everybody into getting saved. He could do that. But he's chosen to use the church. He's chosen to give us value. He's chosen to give us self-worth. He's chosen to give us the dignity of being his ambassadors. So he doesn't need this, but he chooses to. So our hope comes from we run into that. We're prisoners of hope. We realize things aren't going well, but I'm going to trust him. Was it Job said, though he slay me, yeah, I will praise him. Second thing in that is to run into what I'm calling the fortress of integrity. Zechariah 9:12, if you take notes, says, return to the fortress, you prisoner of hope. Return to the fortress. You're a prisoner of hope, but what's the fortress? I think it's like, it's integrity. And Joseph's integrity is what keeps him safe in the midst of quite a lot of temptation. I assume that Pharaoh's wife's good looking. I assume she's not, you know, he's the most powerful man in the world. I assume his wife is the least decent looking. Otherwise, I can see why he ran away from her. But I think she's probably a beautiful woman. She'd have all the beauty treatments and stuff that went on. But here's a fact, that just because you do good doesn't mean you'll have good things done to you in return. I know that we reap what we sow, eventually. But sometimes it appears as if you do good to people and you don't get anything back. Sometimes you're really nice to someone and you help them and all you get is abuse from them. It's like you put yourself out. I remember once we gave a family in the church our car because I was buying a new car. And I said, Mandy, you know, they hardly give you anything as a trade-in. And there's this one family. I said, well, you know, it'd be good to just give them a car. And every Sunday I'd see them bring it to church with another dent in it. I was never washed. And it was full of junk. And within 6 months, it was off the road because something broke in it. And I thought, I could have kept that the last 6 months. And I could have driven that around. And the Lord said to me, so you've not given it to them yet? I said, what do you mean? It was not yours. I thought, it's sort of mine. You know, they didn't buy it off me. I've given it to them. Surely, and there are times when you actually give to people and you get nothing back. So what's your reason for giving? If you were giving, then let go and don't expect anything back. The anything back is a plus. Because trust me, people will let you down. People you think you've pulled your life into will let you down. And I'm sure pastors know how many times somebody says, "I just love this church, the best people, you're the best preacher in the world. I've never been in a place like this." And this. Whenever somebody gives me that sort of speech, I'm thinking, you're leaving, aren't you? You're not going to be around long. You are not going to be around long. But there's I think three or four things I'll just give you for lunch. I'll just say this. Marks of integrity is how to keep your integrity. Number one, you have to keep a right attitude. Joseph found favour wherever he went. He must have had a good attitude. He wasn't sour-faced going around, "I'm supposed to have been in charge, I'm supposed to have done this, and stinking brothers stuck me in here, slave, I shouldn't be a slave. You know, in our house, in our family, we were servants, I shouldn't be a servant." And he should have gone around with that sort of demeanour. He wouldn't have found favour in anybody's eyes. Do you ever meet people who are just, you don't want to ask them how they are? Do you know what I mean? Because they spend a long time telling you. I mean, mustn't be unkind, but sometimes people, you know, like I said, I don't suffer from depression, but some people, once they start talking to me, I do feel depressed. I think I know what this feels like. What a terrible life, it's tearing me. I remember saying to this person, I thought it was a joke, but they didn't take it that way. I said, "Joe, if you were a horse, we'd have to put you down." That's what I said to them. And I thought, "No, I'm sorry, I didn't mean it in a bad way. I didn't realise she liked horses. It wasn't because I said it to her. It wasn't because I love horses." I said, "Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't..." It's when you're in the middle of your dream being refined, it's because you're getting closer to it being fulfilled. When God is changing you in the middle of your life, it's so your dream can be fulfilled. You have to embrace the process. The quicker you embrace the process, the quicker the change comes and the quicker the dream is fulfilled. So we have to keep a right attitude. And I think sometimes, you know, joy is our inheritance. In the presence of the Lord is fullness of joy. So if you live in His presence, you'll always have joy. But happiness is a choice. Happiness, and to most of us, it depends on what happens. It's like, if just before I came in, I said, you know, my Aunt Flora's died. And David said, because he's lovely at this, "Oh, I'm really sorry, could I pray for you?" And said, this isn't true, by the way, it's a made up, before you get too excited. No, I said, "Well, actually, you know, I didn't know I had a great Aunt Flora until Solicitor phoned me this morning and told me she'd left me £3 million. I'm absolutely delighted she's died." Because what happens depends whether you're happy or not. If she'd been my favourite auntie, I'd be upset. But if she's somebody I don't know and she's left me millions of pounds, I'm delighted. Happiness depends on circumstance. Joy depends on whose presence you live your life. And so I choose to live my life in the presence of the King. Because if you live your life in the presence, there'll always be a fullness of joy, which is bigger than happiness. It's stronger than happiness. It's not just dependent on circumstances. But the second thing is we have to be faithful in what is at hand to do. Joseph wasn't waiting for the next job and thinking, "Well, once somebody delivers me, if this is true, God will deliver me from this. So I'll just hang around and I'll just do the bare minimum. And then somebody will come deliver me. Maybe my brothers will feel sorry for me. They'll come buy me back. And maybe that's what's going to happen." He doesn't do that. Whether he's thinking that in the back of his mind or not, he's actually getting on with it. And it's quite a challenge to us sometimes to get on with things when we're feeling sorry for ourselves. It's a real challenge. When I'm feeling sorry for myself, I'm at my least productive. Because, you know, everybody hates me, nobody loves me. I think I'll go and eat worms. I won't go on with that, lunch is coming. You get that point, you're just thinking, "No, I'm really..." But no, actually, it makes you want to do nothing. When you're feeling sorry for yourself, you want to just do nothing, but actually, we have to be faithful in what is at hand. Fulfillment is not just something that comes from the outside in, but it comes from the inside out. It's when you do what is within you that you get fulfilled. Proverbs says that many a man claims to have unfailing love, but a faithful man who can find. In other words, everyone says they're doing it, but actually, it's not that common for people actually do what they say they're going to do. Third mark of this man of integrity is that the Lord was with him. Several times it says, "The Lord is with you." And Jesus said, "I will be with you. I'll never leave you nor forsake you." And when God is with you in ways which you do not realize, the things that you do prosper. I believe in work, you'll sometimes see things happening in your department where it gets blessed more than other departments. Just because you are there, your presence is there, and you're ministering in a way which exhibits His presence by the right attitude, it brings the blessing of God, and the whole department gets better. And I think everything you do gets better. I remember my chief accountant saying to me that, he said, "Well, when I said I was leaving, he said, 'We're sorry we're leaving because since you came, we've hit all of our targets.'" And I knew it wasn't me. I think the favour of God was on him because everyone was happier. Because I'm such a great joke teller that people in our department were so happy. Because you bring the presence. You bring the presence. You bring the presence. the Lord is with us. But the other thing, this, it tells us he's a man of integrity. And he resists the temptation because he's a man of integrity. When things are not going well, it's a very dangerous time. Because you feel you deserve just a little something to help you. And sometimes with a little something, which is not allowed. I'm not talking about a bar of chocolate here. I'm talking about a relationship which is illicit. I'm talking about sort of websites which are you shouldn't be going on. Just something to cheer yourself up a little bit. It's just something. But integrity stops you going there. And this lady, when she comes and she sort of tries to throw herself at him, this is one word, distance. The best thing to put between you and temptation is distance. You're not going to commit adultery with someone's 10 miles away. Because the man says he wasn't with her. Because, in fact, D.L. Moody, he said, I love this quote, when you flee temptation, don't leave a forwarding address. Just get out of there. Just, if you have a weakness in your life, put distance between you and them. If there is someone, a friend or some acquaintance, every time you get together, you just have conversations which are so bad about other people, you come away feeling a bit guilty. You need to suggest either they change or you stop seeing each other. You need to put distance between. And some people, if you always come away feeling worse from being with them than better, then either you have to change that relationship or change the friend. That has to happen. You have to put distance and make a decision about it. Like we once had a man in our church get saved, and he said, I'm not sure what to do because he spent a lot of money on pornography, and pornographic films and magazines, and he said, I'm not sure what to do with them, and I said, well, burn them. He said, you've no idea how much you're talking about here. I said, I have no idea. I mean, he said, do you know how much they cost? I said, no, I have no idea how much it costs. I don't have a clue. And he said, I have an excess of £10,000 worth of films and magazines. And he said, so I'm thinking I'm going to sell them. And he said, if I sell them, I give the money to the church. I said, no, we're going to burn them. And come around, and I'd never seen so many. I'd never seen so much stuff in sort of his videos and stuff like that. We set fire to them, and this should bonfire. Because, this is what I said to him. Listen, he says, it's such a waste of money just to burn them. I said, no, the waste of money was buying them. The burning them is the best investment you could ever have in your future. So you're wasting your money once, and actually you have to begin to see integrity, let you see that the things, the past, I'm putting distance from that. I'll never be going, I said, you'll never look at those films again, because they're burnt, they're gone forever. And sometimes we have to deconstruct things from our past to release us into the future. Some things that are still holding us back, we have to be distanced from them. That's what happened to him. Because this temptation comes back time and time again. This woman didn't just... It returns. Temptation returns. Temptation happens once is one thing. But day by day, some temptations don't go away. The way you're down, the crowd's in on you. And you need to make a decision to go God's way. And Joseph decides to take comfort in the Creator, not the creation. And there's times when we are tempted for our dream. We have to choose to take our joy in the Creator, not in the creation. And the result is that this temptation, like Adam's temptation, led to man's fall. Jesus' temptation saw Satan fall. And we align ourselves with Jesus. And if you're not careful, you can rationalize yourself into failure, into thinking, I'm not strong enough, I'm not like everybody else. Paul said, I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. I'm nearly finished. Are you hungry yet? I heard it's haggis for lunch. I don't know if that's true. I did put in a special request. I thought that would be a great thing. But because there comes a time when reason ends and running starts. There comes a time when reason ends and running starts. Sometimes I find that people want to seek, understand, why do I feel like this? Why do I do this? Listen, put the distance in before you start to analyse what your problem was. Get yourself away from the temptation. Get yourself away from the thing that always drags you down. And then we'll discuss it. Because when you're in the middle of it, it just keeps pulling you down, pulling you away. Because real temptation is to find a shortcut out of misery. That's self-gratification. And it's almost like Joseph knows God's got great things for him to bring peace and joy into his life. And the temptation is to manipulate life to get that on your own. But remember, it's not that long ago before this story where Abraham gets a word from God. He's going to have a child. And this son's going to lead to sort of nations. And Sarah just laughs at her and says, that's not going to happen. I mean, I'm old, but you're really past it, Abraham. And so, but nevertheless, she offers him, so why don't you sleep with my servant? And which seemed like something that happened in those days. You slept with the woman's servant, it's the same as it became part of the family. We don't do that anymore, just so you know. But they sort of thought, we helped God out. And you know, the child that was born from that is called Ishmael. And Ishmael is the father of all the Arabs. And then Isaac was born at the right time. And actually later on God says, when he says to Abraham, take your son Isaac up the hill, your son, your only son Isaac. You only recognize that one. Because whenever you try to help manipulate the will of God, you'll end up with an Ishmael instead of an Isaac. And we're still dealing with the problem of Ishmael and Isaac. We're still in the world. We're still in the Middle East. Is up in the air because Ishmael and Isaac. Why? Because Abraham and Sarah thought we need to help God out. When you try and manipulate the will of God rather than seek it and submit yourself to it, you end up with Ishmael instead of Isaac. But the prison where Joseph ended up was like a fortress for him. Because now his integrity gave him a fortress to run into. But he wasn't going to be tempted anymore. But he still kept his attitude right. So when your dream turns into a nightmare, run into the fortress of hope and become a prisoner of integrity until God brings us out into the fulfillment of our dreams. Amen.